Celeb Savant is a career retrospective type interview focusing on singers, actors, and industry experts. Join Barrett Edelstein now as he dives into the entertainment world.
South African singer and songwriter and musician James Deacon has been nominated for South African Music Awards. His songs have charted on South African radio stations, namely 5FM, 947 and KFM. James's singles have received online support from lauded sites such as Complex, Record of the Day, Ear Milk and Clash, and were playlisted on Passport Approved, an independent, internationally syndicated tastemaker import radio show that airs on over 50 radio stations and 6 continents worldwide. His music has been featured on television shows such as Son of Apollo, Good Trouble, The Rookie, and many more. Up next on Celeb Savant, live in studio at Solid Gold Podcast in Randburg, Johannesburg, South Africa, is James Deacon. James, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great, man. Nice to see you. Hey, what's up? It's me, James Deacon, and super grateful and happy to be here, man.
So James, let's rewind. At what age, whether it was a child or teenager, did you realize, cool, you want to be in the music, entertainment, creative world? And how did that journey progress to where we are?
So the story goes, when I was 4 years old, apparently, I don't vividly remember when I was 4 years old, but apparently, according to my parents, when I was 4 years old, I walked into their bedroom one evening before bed and I said, Mom, Dad, I want to learn to play the violin. And they were like, you are a strange child. but thank goodness they literally went out the next day and found a violin teacher that was teaching kids of age 4 and up and stuff. I started out with a toilet roll stuck into a tissue box and a stick from the garden. And I would stand with all the bigger kids who had actual violins, and I would stand like this and just to get the posture right. Like for the first year, I just learned posture on the violin, but it was the best experience ever. And it felt like before then, my life didn't really have meaning, and then it was like, okay, this is the meaning of my life kind of thing. Since age four, I've been playing violin up until about like 16. I was doing it like almost semi-professionally. I traveled Italy and the USA playing violin in conferences and stuff. I won the South African National High Stateford when I was 9 for the best violinist under 21 in South Africa. Wow. So I was the only 9-year-old in the category. It was all like 21-year-olds and 20-year-olds in university. And then it was me, and I won. And then the government flew me around Italy and my mom, obviously, because I was 9, so I couldn't really travel alone. So my mom and I went and we traveled Italy for months, performing at conferences and stuff. And then we went to the US as well. It was kind of from a very young age, I knew that I had something in me that was good with music. And I've always believed it's my ear. I've just got like a really good ear when it comes to music. I'm not the most technical musician. And when I was about 10 years old, 11, 12, it was probably about 12, I started obviously getting interested in girls. And then I was like, how often in the movies does the violinist get the girl? And it was very seldom. So I decided to pivot and start doing the guitar. So I asked my dad to like get me a little electric guitar. He got me one from Cash Converters. It was like a kid's guitar with a mini amp. And I fell in love listening to basically only exclusively Jimi Hendrix. I had an old scratch CD that didn't have a name on it, so I didn't know who it was. I just heard Jimi Hendrix music, and I didn't know who it was. I didn't know the name of the songs. I just heard this music, and I was like, that is incredible. So I chose a really difficult way to start guitar. I was kind of like sitting trying to learn the most difficult chords and riffs of all time. But I fell in love with guitar and started singing through school. So my musical journey has literally been my entire life. It's since I was 4 years old. I can't remember a time in my life where I wasn't having a singular focus of music.
So you don't play the violin anymore?
No, I do.
Oh,
I do.
Do.
So I had an injury. I was a bartender, one of the many jobs I've had in my sort of journey towards becoming a professional musician. I fell in a bottle and I cut all the nerves and arteries and tendons here.
Okay.
Meaning that these two fingers don't work anymore. So it's made holding a violin bow very difficult. So I've had to completely relearn how to play the instrument. Oh. Same as guitar as well. Holding a pick is actually quite difficult with just three fingers and not really good independent movement. So that's taken me a good long time to get there. But I've actually, in one of my most recent records, I've literally just been playing the violin. So I brought it back. I'm definitely not as good as I was when I was nine, but I'm working on it every day to try and get back to that level. I believe that I can get back to that same sort of standard of playing violin. But yeah, so I mainly play the guitar and sing and obviously rap and stuff. But yeah, I do in all of my songs from the very beginning of my career in 2019, that every song I've released, I've played every single instrument that you hear in the tracks.
Oh, wow.
So yeah, from the program drums to the drum kits to the guitars to the bass guitars to the violins, any string sections, the cellos, literally I've played all of them.
Did violin or knowing and understanding and how to play the violin give you the foundation to learn other instruments, or were they completely a separate world and entity?
No, 100%. You hit the nail on the head there. Yeah, like literally knowing the concept of a string instrument, especially one as difficult as the violin, where you don't have sort of reference points like frets. You just sort of have to know where the notes are just from practicing and dedication. And also things like vibrato and putting feeling behind a note and stuff like that. That came from violin. And then when I pivoted to guitar, I already was a step ahead of most of the 12-year-olds learning how to play guitar, because yeah, I'd been playing violin for so long that a string instrument wasn't a foreign concept to me. It was, the only thing was playing chords, because with the violin, it's very much single notes or double stops. The most you can play is two strings at once.
Okay.
So that was like the closest thing to a chord I'd ever gotten to. And then with guitar, it's like, oh my gosh, there's six strings that I can make chords with. Like, that was the most difficult thing. And actually also strumming was a very difficult thing to work out, but it definitely like shaped the way I see instruments. I look at the world through string instruments, kind of, because of starting with violin.
Okay, so you mentioned that you had a whole bunch of jobs, bartending. What were the other jobs that you had before becoming professional?
Oh, wow. So when I got my first job when I was 14, which was illegal because people are not allowed to employ 14-year-olds. But I lied about how old I was. And I used to wash dishes in a Spanish restaurant in the Colony Center in Craighall Park. And yeah, I used to literally just like wash the dishes for $100 a night. And then that was my first ever job. Then eventually I got moved from the dishwashing section, the scullery section, to the fry section. And I was like the deep fry guy. So I deep fried for a while. And then, yeah, I moved over to the grill section. So I was a chef for like a good 4 years in high school. Then eventually moved to front of house when I was old enough to actually be present there and people could see me. So then, I was like a front of house manager. I was a bartender, waiter, obviously. I've also done jobs where I basically, everyone in the neighborhood, it's actually a similar neighborhood to where we are right now. I used to walk people's dogs. So I used to literally just go around people's houses, pick up their dogs and walk their dogs. I've always been a strong believer that like having a day job or having something to ground you, some sort of job, is really important, because it kind of teaches you a work ethic. And especially being in high school, I kind of ended up neglecting high school in favor of like ways to make money, because like I wanted to play PlayStation games and they cost money. So yeah. Like, yeah, that's that. And then I eventually, when later in life, moved on to working at a South African insurance company.
Yes.
And I ended up, basically being a salesman on a floor of like 250 salespeople, and just calling people on the phone saying, "Hello, sir, can I interest you in some car insurance today?" I was that guy that everyone goes, "Leave me alone." Beep, beep, beep. Yeah. So I did that for a while. I was actually relatively successful doing it. And it taught me a lot about sort of talking on the phone and being able, yes, to conduct myself in a certain way,
yeah,
in an interview or in a conversational way. So that actually helped me. I found that like all the different paths I've taken have all kind of led me to upskill myself in certain ways that have all helped me since I started my music career. But yeah, that was the last job I had before I went into music. So before that, it was all hospitality, and I worked in a hotel. It was all sort of people jobs and hospitality jobs. And then eventually it was salesman for insurance company. But that was kind of a very pivotal moment for me, because I was sitting on the floor of my girlfriend's bedroom at the time, and I was just like, I hate my life. She was like, why? And she was like, I was just like, I hate not doing music. Like, I can feel it inside me, like this is what I was born to do and I haven't done it yet, and I've still got so much to do, and I just want to give it a shot before I'm too old, let's say, to feel like I can give it a full shot with my life. And she was just like, why are you doing it then? Just quit the insurance thing and go do music. And that's kind of exactly what I did. I ended up getting discovered by my current record label. I was singing karaoke in a bar, literally no like intention of anyone hearing me.
Yes.
It was like three people in the bar. And I was just singing karaoke to me and two of my friends who could like basically bullied me into going and singing. They were like, come on, come on, you're so good. Just go do it. And I was like, oh, I don't want to. Anyway, I did it and got discovered by this record producer who was literally having a beer in the back with his mates and was like, hey, dude, do you want to come to my studio and like see what it's like recording music? And I was like, hell yeah, that sounds amazing. And it was literally like within the same time frame of me wanting to quit my job. And then literally, yeah, within like a year from there, I was releasing music and I was quit everything else and full-time musician.
Oh, I love this story. It's so motivational. It's so inspiring. It's about being at the right place at the right time and just letting the energy flow.
Yeah.
That's exactly
And manifesting it, yeah.
Exactly, manifestation. From 0 to 3 to 4 minutes in creating a song, you already referenced, you play all the instruments, but the creative process and with the channeling it from wherever it comes in through to you as a vessel, is it easy every time? What invigorates it? What motivates it? Is it a soul creation or to collaborate with other writers and, or producers? Let's unpack James's creative process.
For me, it's never a linear process. It's never a one size fits all thing. It's never a, okay, I always, when I write a song, I sit down, I pick up a guitar, I think of a story and then a boom. It's more like, songwriting has become a form of therapy for me.
Yeah.
It's kind of my way of unpacking what's happened in my life and in the lives of the people that I care about and the things that have really affected me throughout my life. I've used music as a way of channeling those emotions into something that's not necessarily positive, but it's a more positive outcome than sitting in your room crying. So it's kind of instead of seeking out therapy in a like with a therapist, I kind of used my guitar as therapy, or used my computer as therapy, or a microphone as therapy. So 9 times out of 10, a song comes out of a place of real emotion. Sometimes I am just making music for fun, and that's only something that's happened since I've been doing it for about 4 to 5 years now. Like in about the third or fourth year of being a professional musician, I started kind of taking the reins off a little bit and being like, you know, it doesn't always have to be so emotionally charged. It can just be fun and it can just be to get people up off their feet and let people have a good time. It's a plethora of different emotions that I kind of channel through my music into what it ends up being. I play every single instrument, from the drums to the guitars to the violins that you hear. All the backing vocals, I never use backing vocalists. It's always just me singing in different pitches and changing my voice slightly. Yep. So since I started my career as James Deacon, I've collaborated exclusively with one producer, because I'm not the best computer guy. I can do very rudimentary stuff on a computer, but I'm like on the balance of things, I'm actually quite computer illiterate. When I sit down in front of a computer, anything to do with maths or computers, it just makes my brain hurt.
Snap, yeah.
Is it?
Totally
really?
The
okay,
same.
Great.
Totally
yeah.
The same.
Yeah, and it just makes me anxious and it makes me feel dumb and it makes me feel like that little kid back in maths class who was too afraid to ask for like help on a question. I literally decided like I need to find someone who has that skill set, because for me to try and upskill myself to a point where I can make professional level productions is going to take so long that it's going to stop me from getting into this with the skill set I already have, which I felt worthy of putting out. So I was like, I've worked really hard to be a really good instrumentalist and songwriter, and I believe that deserves to be seen and heard. So I need to fill in the gaps that make that happen. So I met Paul Gala, who's the head of Bad Future Records, is my record label. We basically, he was introduced to me by that guy who heard me singing karaoke.
Yes.
So it all kind of led into this, and I sat down in studio with him and he played me a beat, and it was the beat that you hear in my song Not Giving Up, which was my first ever release. So he just had the beat, no bass line, anything. It was like the basic beat that you hear in the chorus. And he played that for me. And I was like, wow, that is the real deal. Like, that's different to anything I'd heard come out of South Africa. And it was just a beat. So I was like, wow, okay, I want to hear what else this guy can do. And I saw all of his gear and equipment's all analog. He's like patching things in. It's no plugins. It's all analog gear. So I was like, wow, okay. And then literally he played the track. the beat, and then I went into the booth and he was like, show me what you got, like just over a beat. So I rapped, it's actually quite a cool story because the rap that I did over that was a rap, it was another person's lyrics, but it was a rap that I'd spent time, instead of studying for my history final in matric,
yes.
I was supposed to be studying history. And I remember sitting in the garden of my house and being like, I don't want to do this. I want to learn this rap of this song that I heard. And I literally spent like 5 hours learning this rap verbatim. And then literally like in the spur of the moment, he was like, just like, show me what you can do over the beat. And I was like, okay. I was like, I'm going to rap this thing. I didn't write these words, so I'll have to change the words. But this is the flow that I'm feeling. And I rapped that sort of thing that I learned instead of studying for history. And he was like, that was awesome. And it kind of sparked the idea. And then within 20 minutes, we finished the entire song.
Oh, wow.
I laid down the vocals. I laid in backing vocals. Like the whole idea for the song was done in 20 minutes. We obviously went back into it and polished it. And literally I walked out of the booth and he was like, dude, like, where do I need to get you to sign so that you come and work with me? And I was like, dude, I feel the same. I want to work with you just as much. That was the beginning of my career. Literally, we released that song within, I think, 3 months of that. And it went to number one on 5FM. And then it got picked up by a bunch of international radio stations. It was featured on Record of the Day in the US. It was played on BBC Radio 1. And like all within the space of 3 months of releasing it. And we didn't have any budget for promoting it. We just put it out there.
Yes.
And then we called a couple of contacts. We had a couple of contacts in the industry that we'd built up. And literally through that, it got so much success and so many people like contacting me saying like, whoa, when's the next thing coming? Like, this is amazing. And I was like, oh my gosh, like I'm actually doing it. All of these years since I was 4, like here I am actually doing the thing that I've always wanted to do. And so that was like a massive moment for me. But yeah, when it comes to songwriting specifically, just going back to your question, because I kind of went off on a tangent.
No, I'm loving the stories.
the process for me is sometimes it comes out of real heartache, like really bad situations. Sometimes it comes out of good situations. But it's more about me just kind of being in tune with the energies
yes.
that are around me. I'm a big believer in the fact that like, us as humans, our brains operate on frequencies, and I feel that we can get influenced by things quite easily. And I find personally when there's lots of people awake, so in the times, the heavily populated times of the day when everyone is up and awake, it feels almost like I can't connect with that thing that I connect with to make music. So 9 times out of 10, my ideas come at like 3 a.m., 4 a.m. when everyone else is sleeping. I'm still awake, wired, and I'm sitting with a guitar or sitting at a computer, sitting with a keyboard. And that's when the ideas come. That's when it feels almost like there's enough bandwidth available for me to tap into what it is I tap into to make music. But yeah, I can't tell where it comes from. It's kind of like it comes from an exterior source. It's almost like I'm tapping into something else. It kind of sounds a little bit hippy-dippy, airy-fairy type of vibe. But yeah, it's the only way I can explain it. It's like I'm tapping into, it's what I believe is God. I tap into some sort of connection with the higher power. And that kind of channels through me because there's certain things that I've done and can do musically that I've never really worked on doing. It's just I've always been able to do like vocal things and like being able to do impressions and stuff like all of that. Since I was literally the tiniest kid, no one showed me how to do it. I just knew. So I've always just channeled that into my music.
Now, I'm not sure if you're aware of NLP, neuro-linguistic programming.
Big fan of NLP. Okay. I read The Game by Neil Strauss when I was like 12 as well. So, yeah.
So for the listeners, NLP is one specific area of it is the way people process information.
Mm.
You've got visual people who create pictures. You have audio people who understand or process information through the words and sentences. And then you've got kinesthetic people that process information through the energy, the body language, the tone of voice. Now, focusing specifically on music, not other areas, because you know that you will have secondary and tertiary. But when you're listening to music of your own or by other artists, are you creating pictures? Are you hearing the words? Or is it about the energy and the feeling?
Oh, it's almost like a whirlwind of all three.
Okay.
It's very weird. It's it depends also on the genre. Specific genres elicit different reactions from me. So like I listen to a lot of like old school hip hop, like Wu-Tang Clan and MF Doom and stuff. And that style of music, I'm very drawn to the words and the stories that are being told. So that's more like the words that are just driving the emotion behind it. But then there are also certain artists, like also in the hip-hop sphere, sort of Mac Miller. There's certain Mac Miller songs where it's not about the words, it's more about the music that's happening. Mm. And then it's like a sensory feeling. But I would say it's kind of like an amalgamation of all three. I also listen to a lot of classical music. My music tastes are all over the place. If you tried to map it on like a mind map, it would look ridiculous. It looked like the mind of a madman. It's like, literally, I like go from drum and bass to like death metal to like Brahms. So like, it's very weird. And yeah, so I feel definitely specific to that question, I'd say it's a mix of all three
yeah.
that kind of flow yeah. into each other without sort of much thought about it.
Okay, yeah. I'm the same. So no, but now when you're listening to music by other artists, are you able to just relax and enjoy the music for what it is, or is your technical creative brain unpacking what is happening?
That is a very good question, and I've never been asked it before. And that is actually something that I've spoken about with my friends before. It's super difficult since becoming a professional musician and sort of looking at this as a career, as a calling, as something that I'm throwing every fiber of my being and energy into. It changed the way I consume music almost. I don't listen to music as much as I did. I find I do lock myself into a mode of just like criticizing and analyzing and stuff. And it only with certain specific artists is there no analyzation. That's like analyzing. I don't know if that's even a word.
I make up words.
Analyzation.
I think it should be a word. Yes.
Put it in the dictionary. Yes, analyzation.
I love it.
By me. But yeah, so I literally. Yeah, that's a really good question, man. Because yeah, I'll give an example. Like, I went to watch the Foo Fighters when they came to South Africa, and even then, I wasn't a full time musician yet. I was in a band that we were trying, and we were really passionate about playing Opie Kopie. We eventually did play Opie Kopie, the final one, the last one before they closed down. In that journey, I got the chance to go and watch the Foo Fighters. A friend of mine just called me. I was working actually at that Spanish restaurant. I was washing dishes and I got a call. And I knew everyone was going to watch Foo Fighters and I didn't have money for a ticket. And my friend was like, hey, bro, I can't go anymore. Do you want me to just come to your restaurant and drop off the tickets for you? I was like, yes, please. I'd love to. And then I went to the FNB Stadium, watched them. And I remember standing in the audience and being about this close from Dave Grohl when he like walked out on the stage thing. And I was like so close to him and watching, and I was just like, I am so jealous. Like, I am so envious of that position, being able to be there around all those people. And I was like, as much as I love this band and I love this music and I love this man that is standing in front of me, is one third of Nirvana, one third of Tenacious D, like one of my heroes, there was a part of me that was like unable to fully enjoy it because I wanted to be there more than I wanted to be where I was.
Okay.
Not that I was sort of wanting to be him. I just wanted to be doing my thing in that place where he was up on the stage. And being here in the audience felt like I'm doing the wrong thing. Like I'm in the wrong place. It was the weirdest feeling. And like since then, watching bands when they come to ASA, like big famous bands, that I've grown up listening to, is very difficult for me, I'll be honest. Like, it's hard. Like, I stand in the audience and I'm just like, I want to be there. Like, I want to be doing that.
Yes.
I don't want to be here. Like, I can listen to this another time. I'm like, I want to be there. So that's been something that I've struggled with for a long time. Like, even before I was doing music full time. But there's obviously a part of me that's just really appreciative of every artist that's out there, because anyone that's inspired me, because it's kind of shaped me into what I am today. So, but yeah, I definitely say the way I consume music has changed drastically. And now I'm kind of in a place where I only really listen to music if I'm really inspired by it. Like I'm not just listening to music for the sake of music.
Yes.
I'm not just putting it on in the background, because what it does is my brain analyzes things so much when it comes to music. It's like I've kind of trained my brain to listen for everything. Like, where is the hi-hat there? Is that a high pass filter? Like, what is that?
Yeah.
What's going on there? And like chopping through things like that, it actually is quite exhausting. It's not a super relaxing process for me. When I listen to old music, like old classical music and stuff, then that kind of I can switch off, because I'm like, okay, I know how they recorded this, and like I know what the instruments are doing.
Yeah.
It's just, you can just enjoy it for the sake of it.
I love me a CD. I still budget for my CDs every month. I love the aesthetic of the holding of it. I love the journey of the choice, the receiving, the unpacking, the booklet, the listening to song from one to whatever number. I'm not sure if you're aware that CDs, even cassettes and vinyls are making a massive comeback. Last year, 5.9 million vinyls, the biggest since 1990. CDs now in the UK, interesting enough, there's a certain products that they put in the basket to gauge inflation. And vinyls are there now. CDs are putting back in that basket because of the amount of people buying them again.
Wow.
But then we've also got these streaming platforms that people consume music on. What are your observations, perceptions, and enjoyments for yourself?
That's also a great question, because literally yesterday I went with my wife to Harderbeersport just for a fun day together, and we drove the convertible down there, and I drive a really old 2002 convertible and it only has a CD player.
Yes.
It doesn't have the ability to do Bluetooth or Spotify or anything like that. So I literally have been driving around trying to find CD shops, and it's been quite difficult, but we found one in Hearties, and I bought the Creedence Clearwater Revival Gold album.
Yes.
And we literally listened to it from cover to cover, both CDs, like 48 tracks, like literally back when artists used to release 48 tracks at one time. and I think that was actually like a greatest hits
yes.
thing, but absolutely brilliant. And I grew up with CDs. Like, CDs were my first interaction with listening to music, was getting a bunch of CDs and putting it into Discman. I was little and I didn't know what a Discman was, but both of my older brothers had Discmans. And I was like, that looks so cool. And they've always got these things in their ears. It looks so cool. And I was like, they're cool older brothers. I want to look like my cool older brothers. Like, I want to get a Discman. So I asked for one for Christmas, but I didn't ask for any CDs because I didn't know that you needed yes. CDs to make the Discman go. And my parents were like, okay, he wants a Discman. Surely he knows what he's doing here and his brothers will give him CDs. That was not the case. I got the Discman, and then I had the Discman for like 3 months after Christmas without any CDs. So I just had it, and I would put the headphones in, and I would just walk around with it just because I thought I looked cool. And yeah, basically my cousin was is a radio presenter for 5FM, and he at the time had a bunch of CDs when 5 was switching over from CD to digital. Mm. They were like throwing away a bunch of CDs. So he brought a box of CDs to our house, and he like dropped it off. And my older brothers being older brothers, they took all the good CDs. They took like all the ones that I would have wanted to listen to. And they left like 3 scratched, unmarked CDs in the bottom of the box. So I was like, okay, cool. I'm going to take one of those. And I took it and I checked it, and it was Jimi Hendrix's Greatest Hits.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the one that kind of started my journey of being like, I want to do what that is. I don't know what noise that is, but no. I want to do that. So yeah, I wish we were still in an era where there was no streaming platforms and there was no music on the internet. I know that's a weird thing to say, but like, there's something beautiful about a hard copy. There's something beautiful about, like, I remember when like the one Offspring CD came out, I literally like woke up the morning I knew it would be at Look and Listen, and I got my dad to drive me to Look and Listen, and I went and spent like all my money on this Offspring CD. I remember that being such an experience, and I was so closely bonded to the artist and to the music. And I feel like we as artists in the modern era don't really have that ability, because it's quite clinical and like it's taken a lot of the heart out of the whole experience of consuming music. It's kind of like, oh, you heard a new artist? There's all their music.
Yes.
There we go. That's all you have to do. Just that. And that for me is like, it's like a little bit less like, you know, you really want to go and hear that artist. You want to go and buy that CD, put that thing in the CD box.
Yes.
It's a very tactile experience.
Exactly.
I think it's beautiful. Especially vinyls as well. Like just the sound quality of vinyls. I've got a vinyl player at my house, and that's like, I listen to a lot of music that way. I understand that streaming platforms came in as sort of like we want to stop internet piracy of music. And we're going to make a thing that kind of eliminates that, which it to some degree has done. But I feel like there's a lot that goes on behind the scenes of your big streaming platforms that I'm not a fan of.
Yeah.
And that I'm just not really, I'm not happy about. So it's kind of like, it's a give and take. It's like, yeah, it did some good things and it has been cool, because you get reach to probably millions more people than you would have if you just had a CD. I mean, back in the day, it would have been really difficult for me to have as many streams as I do in the US if everything was just on CD.
Exactly.
So I'm not sort of ungrateful for it. I'm kind of just like, there is something missing in the way that people consume music in the modern day. So yeah, if you're saying that like there's a huge turnaround back to CDs, that makes me super happy. I'd love to release a CD.
Yes.
Like I was going through CDs out of these boxes yesterday looking for the Creedence. I eventually found the Creedence one, but it was just all unmarked CDs for like R5. I was like going through them and I was trying to find specific stuff, and I kept seeing like bands that I saw play live when I was a kid and like old South African bands and stuff that I haven't heard of in ages. I'm like, oh, that's really cool. It's like these relics of like the past. It's awesome.
Exactly. So I bought a new CD player last year and it was interesting. Everyone said to me, oh, you're not going to be able to find a CD player. You don't buy them anymore. And I actually went on to take a lot. And there were hundreds of options that I had to narrow it down and narrow it down again.
Crazy.
And then when I got it, I was like so excited and I put my CDs. It's a super cool experience.
Mm.
But now what's next? What's coming up short term, long term?
So basically, in the last year or so, I've had a bunch of issues when it comes to booking agents and promoters and sort of the powers that be, call it, in the music industry, specifically here in South Africa. Because I've had a lot of success internationally. I've had songs used by BMW, GMC, major brands overseas. I've had HBO use my tracks, Netflix USA, Hulu USA.
Yeah.
It's like a really long list of international sort of success that I've had with my music. But when it comes to South Africa, there's been a lot of what I would call gatekeeping, where there's kind of powers that be in the industry that kind of control. It's like there's like three people in South Africa that control the lineups of every festival. And that for me is like, that's got to change, man. We've got to find a way to build a scene. It's almost why I think there aren't any mid-level gigs in South Africa. You've got your stadium shows where your international acts come, and that's like the best it gets. In America, you have American artists performing at stadiums, and American people come out to watch American artists play in American stadiums. Very seldom does that happen in South Africa. I can't think of very many South African acts that come to a South African stadium and play to a sold-out South African stadium. And that's got to change, man. Like, we pride ourselves on being such an inclusive nation and being such a supportive and happy and friendly nation. But in actual fact, that's not really proven when it comes to certain industries. And I think the music industry is one of those. So what I've decided is I cut ties with all of the agents and things that I was working with, and I've decided to do everything myself. So we do everything from my social media to gig promotion to festival lineups, everything that we do ourselves. And when I say us, it's myself, Tungi, my bass guitarist and co-pilot in the studio that I opened, and Wesley, who runs my social media. So basically me and my two best mates, we started a company together, and we are offering all sorts of different services from artist management and production for young artists that don't really know how to get into the music industry, and sort of just sharing everything that I've learned with them, and then giving them all the tools. There's no holding on to things and being like, oh, I'm not going to tell them about that because they might steal it from me. there's no space for that. Like, I literally will give every single contact and every bit of information that I have to them, and if they have what it takes and they're willing to put the work in, then they can succeed too. That's awesome. That's what I want to try and build. I want to try and build something where we create a scene in South Africa where you can go out to a show and it doesn't matter who's on the lineup. You know it's going to be great bands and you know there's going to be lots of people there. One thing I found when we're playing shows is you arrive at the venue and let's say you're on the lineup with two other big name acts in South Africa. The fans will arrive for big name act number one. And then big name act number one goes off stage and they leave. And then big name act number two comes up and their fans arrive. And then they watch, and then they leave. And then big name act number three comes up, new fans. They watch, and then they leave. Now, that's not good for the venues. That means that there will be less venues because the venues can't make enough money to stay open because they're having people who come in and watch for half an hour.
Yes.
How many drinks can you have in half an hour? That's how they make their money. The acts don't make enough money. And then it kind of kills the scene. And then it also makes this thing of like very clicky niche fans. It's like my fans or my fans, and stay away from their fans kind of thing. Whereas it, like, I remember like watching scenes from the 90s, like the grunge revolution in America. You watch acts where like there would be like 10 bands on the lineup. You wouldn't even know what act was playing when. And then there would be a full packed crowd for every act, and they didn't care who was on. They were just there for the event, and for the experience. And that's what a scene is. Like, that's what, and I think that's what's been incredibly lacking in SA. Like the metal scene in SA they've got a bit of they've got the right idea. Like, they've done things really well where you go to a metal show and it will be packed for band one all the way to band six in an evening. So yeah, basically my sort of plan is to try and do what I can to build more of a scene for the benefit of the venues and for the benefit of the artists and the acts, and sort of take the power out of those three people that get to decide everything. Because eventually, if the fans and the people are on your side, that's all that really matters.
Yeah.
Then nobody can say no to you. No one can stand in your way if you can pull a crowd of however many hundreds just off a post on social media type of thing. So that's what we're kind of working on. We're building events. We're building pretty much anything to do with the music industry. We're putting our hand and throwing our cap in the ring kind of thing. I've just recently went to the new studio set up. My producer's now moved to the Cape. And we've now set up an awesome recording studio there. I've spent a couple of weeks just writing and recording some new music, and I've got about five or six new songs ready to come out. So very excited about that. I've decided I'm not doing like long lead times on releases anymore. I'm just dropping. I'm just going to drop my music. I hate sitting on songs, because you make a song in a moment where you're feeling something in that moment, you drop it, then you can move on to the next thing. If you hold on to it, then you kind of like make a bunch more songs. And I'm the kind of person, I'm writing constantly. Like, there's not a day goes by that I'm not writing music. Some of it goes nowhere. Some of it goes to other artists. Some of it goes to movies, adverts, TV shows. And then some of it goes to be released as a James Deacon song. But when it comes to the James Deacon songs, I hate sitting on music because I just want to get it out, and I want like the evolution of me as an artist to keep going.
So. Yeah. You've got me so inspired and motivated. Hey. So I love this game. I know if I had to ask you this question in 2 minutes, 20 years, 5 years, I know your answer will be different every time simply because there's millions of them. I'm not saying favorite, I'm saying top of mind. If you had to push play to five songs once we finish this conversation by other artists, what would those five songs be and by whom?
Oh my goodness. Okay. It would be All Along the Watchtower by Jimi Hendrix, the Jimi Hendrix version. It's originally by Bob Dylan, but Hendrix did a cover that I think brought the song to another level. It would be, I'm on a Plane by Nirvana. It would be 2009 by Mac Miller. It would be Lightweight by Anderson .Paak. And then, oh my gosh, there's so many. It would probably be Stevie Wonder, Sir Duke.
Ah, nice mix. All over, like you said, all over the genres.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's brilliant. Okay, so the podcast is listened to throughout the world. As a final message, what would you like to say?
I just want to say I'm so grateful to wake up every day and be able to say that I am a musician, and that is my career, that is my chosen path. I'm grateful to every single person out there that's ever listened to one of my songs and enjoyed it, or even if you didn't enjoy it, just for listening to it, I'm grateful. I'm grateful to every single person that's ever come to watch me at a show. I'm grateful for my family, I'm grateful for my friends, and I'm grateful that I get to be on this journey. I'm grateful to God for giving me the gifts that I have and for putting me in the position that I am. And if there's one message I can have for anyone out there, if you're sitting in a job that you hate or sitting doing something you don't enjoy doing, and you're day in, day out kind of doing the grind and thinking that that's what you have to do to have a successful life, it's not. Being unsuccessful in something you love doing is far more rewarding than being successful in something that you hate doing. So don't do things unless it brings passion to you and lights that fire deep inside you and makes you feel like you want to wake up in the morning and you want to achieve. So yeah, if you're doing something you hate, just quit and do something you like. And even if it doesn't work out at first, it will be better. It will feel better. Because life is so short and you never know when it's going to be up. So you better just use the time you have to do things that make you happy and passionate and make a difference to people's lives.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Celeb Savant. Please follow Barrett on TikTok, Instagram, YouTube and Facebook at Celeb Savant. That's CelebSavant.